And welcome to Season 10, Episode 6 of Swimming with a Fish. I am Crutch, and I am here once again with the two best guys to do a podcast with, the Chief and the Goon. Chief, how are you today?
I'm not dead yet.
Not dead yet. We appreciate that wholeheartedly. Trust me. It's been a heck of a week. We're moving forward. We're going to have a lot of fun tonight. We have a very special guest that my good friend the Goon is going to tell us all about. But first, Goon, how are you, sir?
Well, I'm doing okay. Hurricane's a little under the weather. Got lots of leg pain.
Everybody's got issues to this.
Well, and of course, that's why we didn't have a show last week.
That's true. That is true.
All of us had things that suddenly came up. I don't believe that's ever happened, all three of us.
Usually it's like, you know, one of us, me, usually just me, you know. But yeah, even the number one fan has been having a few issues, which were thankfully now on the mend. We have a path forward for that as well. Life is good. But we do have a very special guest tonight. Would you please introduce our very special guest, Mr. Goon?
I would be happy to. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Chris Hendrickson. Chris is a friend of mine that I met at the church I go to, and he has a missions story that I couldn't believe, and I really thought you would like to hear it. Here's a guy who does not give up. There are obstacles thrown in the way by, hey, who can say is throwing those obstacles? And he overcame, and he's going to tell us a lot about himself and something that he and his wife have done recently. Welcome, Chris.
Hey, welcome, guys. Well, thank you, Goon and Crutch and Chief and Beef, wherever your name is. Well, glad to be on and to be able to spread stories.
Excellent. Well, you chose not to use a nickname, but I understand you might have some spy stories that might interest people like us.
Well, you guys, we in the prep for this, these guys were updating me on a spy story, and I tried to get my spy story in. And after four interruptions, I said, you know, this is not going to work. And they said, well, we'll get you on the podcast. And I said, okay, that sounds good. Yeah. Well, anyway, here it goes.
Crutch's mom isn't going to be proud of that. She tells us he interrupts too much.
All the time.
Every week.
It's what I do.
All right, so let me go. So as I was telling these guys, my background is in international business and traveled a lot. And my wife, to her good job she was doing with the kids, said told them that I was going away because I was a spy and I had to make things happen around the world. You know, this would go on, and every kid, when they'd ask me, and I'd tell them, of course not, I worked for Pepsi. I mean, that's not a spy thing. It's, you know, it's... So then they thought I made, you know, Pepsi, put it in the can, and had to do that as I went around the world. But anyway, so I brought them on a trip with me down to our Miami office, and we're getting in the elevator, and one of my... one of the guys that worked for me gets on the elevator just after us, and, you know, said hello. Just both get there at the same time. They said, you know, my dad is a spy, and picked it up within seconds and said, you know, what, he's supposed to know that. You guys can't be talking about that in public. You know, your dad's cover will be blown and then he won't be coming home. And he goes on and on for about 10 minutes. And the kids were then truly convinced for the next two or three, 4 years, because they were little at the time, like 3, 6, and 7, that I was a spy.
Nice.
Oh my God! Why didn't we think of that?
Oh, because my son wouldn't have been impressed. So you know.
But I have a real life spy story too, as well. So
excellent!
I was again working for Pepsi, and the regional office was in Singapore, and I was based out of Japan. And every quarter, we'd have to go to report back to the regional office all the good things we were doing. In one time. There was a spy scandal in Singapore, and a gentleman by the name of Hank Hendrickson got kicked out of Singapore for spying for the Americas. And it was a time when Marco was thrown out of the Philippines, and there was a bunch of other activity going on with bad dictators in Asia. And the U.S. asked this gentleman, Mr. Hendrickson, to make some contact with people who could possibly, you know, be let's say, involved in such activities. And so he went with met lunch with a couple of different lawyers. And one day they showed up as he was coming out of his house and said, here's some plane tickets we've got for you to go to Philippines because you've been kicked out for spying for America. And they get sent to Philippines. A few days later, Chris Hendrickson is flying into Singapore to attend a regional meeting. Singapore, customs and immigration decide to pull me aside and go through every single bag and pocket that I had, and ask me all kinds of questions: who my relatives were, who my family was, and an hour later I get out, and all the people that I was meant to be with or was with on the plane was still wondering where the hell I was. I got stuck by customs.
Wow,
and. I found out that, this Mr. Hendrickson got kicked out. And, okay, so they were checking on the last name and making sure there wasn't anything. So for the next five quarters, every time I went to Singapore, the same thing happened. Bring me the last time. Flash forward, now living in Belgium. It's about 10 years later. And we meet this family of Hank Hendrickson. And I didn't know his first name. He's got a son the same age as my son. They become best friends. He's got a daughter the same age as my daughter. They become good friends. We do all kinds of things together. They play sports. We see him at activities. We're going out to dinner as a family. Do that for the 5 years we're in Belgium. Both him and his wife were with the State Department. We come back to the United States, and it was always never clear on exactly when we get together with. He would always be very unclear on exactly what he did for the State Department. He'd always, I do this and that and stuff. So anyway, get back to the States. And the people that were expats in Belgium at a golf get together every year. And about the fourth one in, we're having a few adult beverages. It's getting late at night. And Hank starts telling us about the story of how he got kicked out of Singapore.
That's awesome.
Wow.
So they were right. He really was a spy.
He was a spy. We found out that he did a bunch of things in Laos for a while. He did a bunch of things in the Philippines. And
That's not possible. We were never in Laos.
Well, he was in the army at the time, so he never could have been in Laos. But double. He took somebody else's name. Or something.
Somebody seeing something. Nothing to see here. Move along.
But anyway, that's you guys. Continue with your spy stories. But those are the only two.
Oh, you're way more exciting than we are.
No, there's nothing we do matches that. Absolutely nothing.
Well, I'm glad I came on to it. Took the program a little bit.
So tell us a little bit about your trip to Tanzania, and what it caused you to do.
Let me start from the beginning. I mentioned I have kids, and my oldest daughter found out about this orphanage in Tanzania, and she was looking to do a year or two to do volunteer at that kind of a place. Mm-hmm. Found that they had an opening, and they were looking for a volunteer to come and do marketing and events for them, fundraising type things. So she signed up for it and went to Tanzania, and it's in Moshi, Tanzania. And I don't know if you are familiar with this big mountain in the middle of Tanzania, or on the Tanzania-Kenzimboria border. Mm-hmm. That may or may not have snow at particular times.
Oh, that one.
That one, snow's a Kilimanjaro type thing.
Yeah.
So if you were to want to climb Mount Kilimanjaro, you would start your base in Moshi, Tanzania, which is where this orphanage was.
Okay. Wow.
So my daughter went there, and during her stay there, and as a volunteer, we as a family went and visited her. And my three kids at this point in time, they're all grown up. They all climbed Mount Kilimanjaro, and Willis and I stayed in the town and watched the mountain, made sure it was still there while they were climbing, which is tough to do because it's always shaded in clouds. But anyway, so that's So they, you know, she gave us a tour. We met these people in the orphanage. They were doing great work. They were picking up kids at the time that were runaway or that were orphaned. And there was a lot of orphans at the time. That was when AIDS was pretty running rampant in Africa, and before the AIDS vaccines and medicine came out. So there was, you know, a good amount of orphanage. And then there was a lot of kids that would then go to the big cities. Arusha is not too far from Moshi, which is the second largest city in Tanzania. And they would find these kids on the street and bring them to their center and try to get them back into school. And then if they can, try to locate their relatives. But they were mostly basically an orphanage. And they had about 60 kids. And when we came back at the church I was living in, we were living in Vermont, they had a need for a water tower. The water was pretty intermittent from the city. So if they had a water tower, it would cover it. So they had a fundraiser to raise money for the water tower, which is still standing today. So this is 19 years ago. And every year since then, we've been sending money to Tanzania, Moshi, to a place called Amani, Amani Home for Street Children. And came on Lois's heart that we should go and visit them. And when it came on her heart, you know, obviously came on my heart shortly thereafter that we should go and visit and see how they're doing. And, you know, we got their letters and newsletters and all these types of things, but it's one thing to see. So we decided to go. We were going to go during, Lois was a school nurse. We were going to go during spring break. And timing did not work. It as Bloom told, as mentioned, we had a lot of disruptions and the timing did not work. We also had counted on, there was the school had a, like a fund that you could apply for grants that would, you know, bring back around things. So we were going to use, okay, the grant to pay for her trip. And we were going to go there and we were going to meet it with our daughter-in-law was going to get her PhD in the Netherlands. She was in, they live, my son and daughter-in-law live in South Africa. So we were going to time it and they were going to be there to do her dissertation in Netherlands. We were going to meet them in the Netherlands and spend a few days with them. And that's one of the airlines, the Dutch airline flies to just out to Arusha, which is pretty close to Moshi. So that was going to be, you know, pretty easy trip. Fly to Netherlands, couple hour layover, fly down to Moshi. Next thing you know, that got delayed. Her dissertation got delayed till the summer. Then it got delayed again until November. So that part didn't work. And then Lois had a half cataract surgery. And she knew it was coming up, but it was going to be, you know, planned for, you know, 6-9 months from here when we got back. All of a sudden, the doctor said they got really that bad very quickly, got worse very quickly. So mm-hmm. She needed to get it done sooner. So she got one eye done, had some trouble, had another eye done. So that kept pushing our trip back. The funding didn't work because now she decided to retire. So they only wanted it for full-time people.
Oh, they wouldn't give her the grant. Okay.
So we don't have, now, you know, God provided enough money. We always had enough money to live on, but you're retired, so you don't necessarily want to spend it all. But we've already bought the tickets now, and we're going. And then we had to change the tickets and then, you know, to a later date. And now we're all set to go. We're going to go now in November. But our son down in South Africa decides that he has an opportunity for us. And this opportunity included he's going to be running in a 100-kilometer trail run. It goes up and down the mountains. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Cape Town, South Africa. Cape Town is a very picturesque town right on the ocean, right on the Indian and Atlantic Oceans, right at the corner. And it has this big, big mountain that's a mesa that's flat on the top. And it's called Tabletop Mountain, and there's a lot of mountains. So he had this race that he was going to be 100 kilometers, which is, as you know, it's 60. You guys are all engineers, so understand the math there. It's 60-some miles, And he's running up the hill, across the top, down the backside, over the next hill, up the back, and then come back up the hill.
Run along. I'm tired just thinking about it.
So we had the opportunity to meet him at several of the checkpoints. And so he offered that as an incentive and then threw in the big incentive, which is, and you could watch, then you could watch the grandkids while, you know, my wife and I, we head to Europe for a little R&R.
Finishing up. Needed.
So, of course, we said yes. Next thing you know, got a whole other set of flights, but you can't get from Kenya to or Moshi, Tanzania to South Africa in a short hop.
You had to
go to Nigeria and then take a flight and then stop twice on the way down and then get this local cake down. So we're all set. We go to Amani, we had these plans that said, okay, we want to work. We don't just want to go and, you know, be wined and dined around, you know, and try to, you know, so if we wanted to go and, you know, do some work, we know that they take in these street kids. They have a nurse, that's a kind of a practitioner. Also going to work in the nursing room to help with the nursing, anything they would need with nursing. So we had these plans to do stuff, and they have a farm, so I was going to maybe work at the farm. They had some different projects around the campus that they have, things like that is the plan. And I was going to look at the business office to see if, you know, how they're taking care of the money. Well, the people there kept telling us that they wanted us to show us around and do all these things. And we said, no, we don't want to just be babysat the whole time. We want to actually do something.
Right.
We don't want to be just taking the lunch and taking the dinner and stuff. So anyway, we get there. And the first thing that happens, and Doing will probably really show well on this, is they have a small band of four or five pieces, two of which are actual, one's an actual drum and one is an actual instrument. The others are other types of items. And all the kids are out there doing dances for us. So we jumped right in on that and showed them our moves, and they all really appreciated that. And so then during the next 10 days, they decided to show us around all the activities that they do, and it was just amazing. It was the perfect thing we needed to do, because they have all kinds of things. So instead of just being an orphanage, what they do now, they still collect these street kids, and there's more and more. There's street kids all the time, and they bring them back to safe places. And these are kids from 6, 7 years old up to 12 years old that they target, that age group. And they bring them there, and then they try to find out why they ended up on the street, and then try to fix that problem. So they try to find, make a reconciliation with their family, find a place where an uncle, find a foster home. To get them back in their own setting. And then the ones that can't, they continue to have as they continue to have a you know, as a, they continue to have spaces for them. And then on top of that, they make sure that the kids are going to school, so they have their own school room. And then as soon as they can, as soon as the kids are good enough, because most of these kids are unschooled, or the schooling is they're way behind. As soon as they can get them, they put them into the local public school. When they go back home, they continue to make sure that the kids are in school and that they have all that they need. Because even though it is public school, there's still a lot of costs, and it's pretty expensive for the family. So things like you would never think of, everybody has to have black shoes. You have to have a uniform. You have to buy your own school supplies, paper, pencils. All those kinds of things. And, it's not insignificant to a lot of the poor families.
Sure.
So even if they get the child reconnected with their family, they're going to continue to support them while they go through school. They go back at the beginning on a monthly basis, because these kids come from all over Tanzania. And they take them back to their, they have counselors and, staff people to go out and visit to make sure everything is still going well with their families. So at this point in time, they have at the main place in Moshi, they have somewhere between 50 and 60 kids at any particular time, and they support another 400 to 500 kids out of Quartz, Tanzania, in this kind of in this way. And then they also have a special spot for girls that have been lured into sex trafficking, and they have a special safe place for them, and where they again get all the schooling that they need and training. And then if the kids are good enough all the way, finish primary school, finish secondary school, and can enter college. When we were there, they showed us this girl that was her first day of college, and Amani is going to pay for all of her college and all the way, 4-year college, as well as pay for a stipend, so she has money to live on while she's going to college as well.
Nice.
In addition to that, kids that are not going to end up going to college, they have all these affiliates with trade schools. On their own campus, not on their own campus, but real close by, they have their own farm. So one of the things that they can do is all the kids have to learn some farming, because if when you go back home, oftentimes you're going to have your own farm or house farm.
Excellent.
But you can also work at a farm. So they have one of the trade schools is a farm. And then they took us to trade schools like a metal school, where they learn how to, do things with metal, like they make chairs, they made desks, they made tables and stuff. So I'm making those kinds of things. They have a beauty school for girls to learn how to, do nails and hairdos and all that kind of stuff. And they took us to one of the girls that had recently graduated and opened up her own shop.
That's great.
Yeah, right on the edge of... a pretty poor area, but it was on a main street, and she had like a 8x12 space for her stuff. And so they took us to all these places, and we saw all the things. We saw some of the, we saw this one family where the girl was coming home from school, and the guy offered her a ride on the bike and on a motorbike, and after a while ended up, abusing her. And, and she turned from a really good student and happy-go-lucky and they couldn't figure out why. So she ended up running away. And then Amani found her, got her to a safe place, got her back to her family. Because the same guy would have been there and knew where she lived, they moved the entire family and got the dad another job.
Wow.
Another place. And so that she would have. So they do all these things to think so. We came away blown away from all the good things they do. So it's not just an orphanage like we had seen originally 19 years ago.
Sure. But,
mostly an orphanage. Now it's this full-blown, we're supporting these kids that, all the way until they're, young adults,
late. And the families, too. That's great.
So we were really just blown away by all the good stuff.
And
Go ahead.
What is the name of the outreach?
It's Amani's home for street children. Amani Center for Street Children. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I've actually got the PDF that Goon supplied, and
the sheet that you gave us and scanned it in.
Oh, okay.
So I will be posting that on the show.
The website and other things.
Yep. It has all of that.
Kids.org.
So and I created for you an actual commercial at the end that.
Oh, right.
Kind of points to all of that, and then Crutch will put it out on our website.
Excellent.
And you also have a GoFundMe, I believe, to the water pump to fill that water tower has been broken. Well, I think you told us.
Yeah, they and at the farm they have. I don't know how many acres, let's say 6 or 7 acres they have for them. And they get the water from kind of like down the hill right off the side of the farm. And the water pump broke. So they have to buy now water from the city to be able to do the plants. So they can only afford so much. Before, they grew enough plants that some of the vegetables were able to be sold to other people. Mm-hmm. So it was a fundraiser. It was generated enough income to pay for the farm. And there was now it's just an expense for the farm. They have to buy the things and it's a training program. So it changed from a, so we, it's, um, they wanted they needed to get a new pump, but they didn't have enough cash to do it, and they've got a lot of things going on, as we know. So we thought that would be a tangible thing that we could get that would get them to be able to use all 6 or 7 acres of the farm, and again make it a for profit area that not only the kids can train, but also learn how to do some retail selling, as well as using the vegetables for the fruit and stuff for the kids. So that's all the good things are doing. There's all kinds of great stories about this. So the first day we're there, and go to lunch, and they have this wonderful dish called ugali that looks like potatoes, and has the texture of mashed potatoes, but doesn't come with spoons or with forks or anything. So to eat this ugali, and you normally put on some kind of, most of the meals included some kind of beans that cook kind of look like the baked beans you would buy out of
Navy beans,
and soaked all night and cooked not as much sugar and things like that, but you'd have these baked beans on top of your ugali, and sometimes some days they would have also some either a little bit of a beef or a little bit of strange looking fish or other things, but it didn't come with spoons or anything. So the first day I'm there eating with the kids, and they were showing me how to do it with their hands. Mm-hmm. And I only spoke Swahili, but I got them. They were able to teach me very well with eating without the fork or spoon. And
I love your courage, man. You go to this country and they speak Swahili and you don't, but hey, that's okay.
We'll make it.
Yeah, it would have been a really good idea if we had maybe studied a little bit of Swahili. But they said they teach English in the classroom. Mm-hmm. If you go to secondary school, the secondary school actually is all in English because there used to be a British conclave.
Right.
A British colony. So they have to learn a certain amount of English, and then at school it's all in English in secondary school.
Got it.
But it was interesting. But even the better part of that is, as soon as the adult at the table and all the teachers and staff ate with the kids, and they all spread out. So it wasn't like everybody, all the staff sat together in their own teacher's room or something. So you saw the love for the staff, and they took care of the kids. Mm-hmm. And the kids were all very, very well behaved. But the best part was, as soon as I finished my meal, kid next to me would take and grab the plate and run outside and wash the plate. Because they were trained that they washed all the adults. They washed all their own dishes and they washed all their own clothes. But they would take everybody's plate and go ahead and wash.
Nice.
Wow.
So I'm sure your kids did that for you?
Yeah, sure, sure. My daughter did that. Let me think. Yeah, never. How about you, Crutch?
I'm lucky if my son could use GPS to find the dishwasher. Yeah.
Now Chief's kids may be different because they're living on Slavic rules.
Yeah. Yeah. So they did. Well, no, the younger one did. He would take things. He would clean things. He would also cook things. So,
yeah,
it's much different.
I tried.
The youngest Ogryn is an excellent cook. Yeah. I can speak.
Yes, indeed. When Crutch and I went and visited the chief, I tried to clean my own plate, and that was not allowed.
Yeah,
it was not allowed.
There was a look.
Clean up the table or anything.
Chief's sister-in-law scared me, and I did whatever she wanted after that.
The Iron Curtain is still here.
Alive and well, living in Texas.
But then, I mean, there's lots of stories about there. So one of the first days, one of these kids, he hadn't been there very long and didn't speak a word of English. But he had one of the staff people come over to me because he had never met another Christopher. And they had introduced me as Christopher. And, this kid was maybe 10 years old, 9 or 10 years old, and he just thought it was, a Christopher. And that every day would sort me out and we'd try to talk in, sign language and picture language and stuff. So but it was great because at the end, because he was from the Maasai tribe,
oh.
he, he got them to get me one of those Maasai, you know, red and bright red and looks like a blanket, but you wear it as a
yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was pretty awesome. It was pretty awesome.
I heard. I remember you telling the story about handing out candy too. That was pretty good.
Candy is great. You know, we've been to Africa and other times, and as I said, my son's in South Africa, but we've been on some safaris and stuff, and you know, handing out candy, you know, lollipop type things to kids is a great, great activity to see. So Lois started the handout on right on the playground, and there's 40 kids, 50 kids on the playground, all running around. And then it's probably 2 or 3 acres wide, and it's got basketball courts, soccer field, playgrounds, and all this other stuff. Starts handing out, and all of a sudden, all the kids are running around, trying to get and lobbing Lois. And one of the staff people said, stop, and yell something in Swahili, and all the kids then line up in about 1 minute flat. They got a long line. And
there are militaries that are jealous.
Yeah, military sort of thing. And Lois would just went right down the line and gave out one to each so that everybody got one. And this, by this time, all the staff also had come out to get their lollipop. So in the middle of all these kids in line, you'd have some of the staff. And
kid, adult.
We'd do that. If they were handing out ice cream at work, we'd be out there. Come on.
Oh, heck yeah.
You know we would, Crutch.
My wife drops a basket of, you know, Valentine's Day has already passed, so of course all the Valentine's Day candy's cheap. So all of a sudden, you know, the bowl in front of me, I'm sitting here trying to watch TV and trying to lose weight, and the bowl now is suddenly full of every candy that I love, and I'm like, you know, thanks for the donation. Appreciate it.
Yeah, my wife bought me a bag of M&Ms. Raise your hand if you're diabetic.
Insurance policy. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, right now, that's why. Is that why?
Yeah. Right now, my cousin, the Swamp Fox, is shaking his head ruefully, going, he's not supposed to eat that stuff. He keeps me honest whenever I go to visit him.
We'll be getting a letter. It's okay.
I'm sure we will.
But another really fun time we had, and it gets to the point where kids are kids. So we had brought, you know, those balls you have on the playground that are kind of rubberized and multicolor, or, you know, one color, multicolor, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, they're, we had brought them up, and because you can get them inflated, right? They brought them over then and pump it up. So I had a pump. With a pump and start. So I started pumping the ball up, and they realized what it was. And all of a sudden, I got, you know, 30 helpers to want and had to throw up the ball. But we had about 15 to 20 balls. And within, you know, 20 minutes, all the balls are blown up, and the kids are all over this multi-acre yard kicking the balls. And a couple of the kids decide to kick these balls and see if they can get them up in the tree.
Oh.
So after a number of tries, they succeed. So there's now one of these rubber balls up pretty high in the tree. And so then one of the kids decides that you can get this ball down if we throw our shoes and knock it down. So all of a sudden now.
Oh, there's a plan.
there's now 20 kids with shoes going. And now we have a ball and a couple pairs of shoes.
Because that always happens.
Surprise, surprise. Now, how do we get this ball down? So we got one of the entrepreneurs in the group decides he could climb the tree.
Mm-hmm.
Starts climbing the tree. Now, this ball was up 40 feet, maybe.
Oh.
And so he's climbing, and he climbs the wrong branch, of course. But he's trying to shake the tree, and the ball's over one side, and, it's, 10 or 15 feet away. So he's starting to climb down. Meanwhile, there's four or five now other boys try and climb this tree. And they two of them get on the branch that, where the ball is. They realize which branch it is. Mm-hmm. The branch is not that thick.
No, of course not.
But anyway, so they start shaking it. The ball comes down. Everybody's clapping. Yeah. One shoe falls down. I don't know if all the shoes fell down. But they all climbed down, and luckily they were over cement, and they could have fallen and had a little bit of
Oh,
That, but everybody's safe and kind of. So it was me, and before these kids came down from the tree, they already started to try to kick the balls back off.
Well, that's half the fun of it, you know. If it wasn't for little, you know, with little boys being little boys, it's amazing the species even progresses. We haven't died out.
Yeah, because we would do those things. I mean, that sounds like us, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, I can see doing that in the playground, and some teacher yelling at us, you're not allowed to do it. Meanwhile, you're up there.
Yeah, okay, but I'm already here, so.
Yeah, the monkey bars are on top of asphalt. If you fell on the monkey bars, you fell on the asphalt. It's like, you know.
I viewed the words, you can't do that, as a theory.
I just did it.
Yeah. No, see, you're wrong. I did it. Like, yeah, they never appreciated that.
But it was a great experience, and we are, as Boone said, you know, I had that fundraiser, but we are more committed than before. You know, after 19 years of supporting them, you know, at a modest level, you know, we decided to really up our ante here, and you know, we know they're doing great work, and we met all kinds of kids that had graduated and doing different things, and met kids that, you know, and resupply it or reunited with family members, and you know, saw all the things they do. We saw, you know, saw the kids on, you know, on the streets, and the ones they're trying to get to come to Imani, and we know that they're doing great work, and the staff really loves the kids. You can just see the, you know, they really want to help the kids and stuff, and you know, it's not like this is a job and that's all I have to do. You can really see they're committed to making a difference.
Yeah, it's nice that God is alive and well.
God is alive and well. And it is a secular school, but they, another great story is all the kids go to church on Sunday. And Lois and I took the kids to this Catholic service, Catholic youth service, that was 2 hours in Swahili. And I got a lot out of that service that, you know, all the ups and downs that you know, that go on in the Catholic Church, and
that's why we get our calisthenics.
When I was still down on my knees, and I got paps on my shoulders saying, you know, what the heck are you doing here? Don't you know what you have to do when you go to church? It's time to stand up. You know?
Stand up, sit down, kneel. I remember all that.
They did so, but it's a great organization. I know it works. They have a U.S. fundraising group. They have a fundraising group in the UK, and one in the Netherlands, and then one in Germany.
Awesome.
And it's all run on individual donations. The you know, they don't get any USAID money. They got some grant money when they built the original orphanage and buying the land. But since that time, and it's all just individual donations.
Outstanding.
And it.
We're definitely going to do our part. We're going to make sure we post it all through the show.
Absolutely. That's Showcat who's telling you that she approves.
Showcat?
Right there.
It is a real cat.
Yes. Yes. She started, when we started doing this as therapy for our jobs 10 years ago, she decided that it was her pod.
Therapy didn't work?
Well, this is cheaper. She decided this was her podcast.
Well,
yeah. Like most cats, she owns everything. Yeah.
And the mic that I have is double-sided, so if she comes and talks on this side, you'll be able to hear her. And okay. I think she knows.
Yeah.
She wants to get her saying.
That's right. Every week.
Every week.
No dogs. No dogs.
I have three dogs, but they're upstairs, and I've had my headphones on. I haven't heard them this week. Have either you guys?
Nope. The Canine Protective Force has not seen a speck move, but they have not been.
Yes, apparently. Yeah, organic material moving up there. Otherwise, there would be the barkage.
Well, Canine Protective Force member Stitch broke his toe last week on the ice. So he's been, we got him some feel better pills.
Helping the Olympics for him.
Yep. It quiets him right down. And since he's the pack leader, I guess it quiets the other two down, too.
Now you know the secret.
Better living through chemistry.
There you go. Thank you, Dow Chemical.
You know, guys, I don't see how we could top this story.
No, this has been outstanding. Well, it has been a real pleasure.
I've got a suggestion for you.
Okay.
There we go.
Right? So they have on the farm, they have a barn that can fit two cows. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
One of the guy that heads the farm group, one of his dreams, let's say, is to double the size of the barn and have four cows.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's an opportunity for you and your listeners to help them go over there and build the other two, the other barn for the other two cows.
I'll go to Tanzania. How about you? How about you, Crutch? Can you speak any Swahili?
You don't need Swahili.
I barely speak English.
What are you talking about?
We might have to ask permission first.
That we would definitely have to ask permission. Unless we're retired, then we're not travel restricted anymore.
Okay, well that's true. And
I think Tanzania is okay though.
I don't know.
It's one of the safer places, although I didn't get into the fact that they had had an election just as we got there, and there were some disruptions while we were there.
Oh, there's a shock.
but compared to a lot of the rest of Africa, it's a lot safer.
Cool. Yeah. We'll be a lot less travel restricted once we retire. I think Crutch is going to get there before me.
Well, I have a 91-year-old mother, our number one fan, and I'm doing my best to be amateur support services, but it would certainly be easier if I wasn't going to work 5 days a week.
You know what? I know the work you did this week, and your mom's proud of you, buddy.
It has been a week. She recently fell and hurt herself, so we're doing a lot of CAT scans and MRIs and meetings with various doctors to see how we're going to proceed forward on that. And everybody's wished her very well, and she's gotten lots of texts.
You and your brother, Crutch Bro.
Yeah. My brother really came through. He's definitely a logistics guy, so he's been arranging for round the clock services for her. So that was. A little low.
If he would like a different nickname, just have him tell us, and we'll start using it.
Everybody gets a nom de guerre.
Well, not everybody. I mean, you can choose not to.
Oh, I like my anonymity. I can walk through the airport, and no one knows who I am. Yeah, right. Okay.
I don't understand. When you and I travel together, nobody knew you, but everybody knew me.
Yes. I don't know how much you have experienced, Chris. I don't know how much you've experienced the goon's innate charisma. Like, he radiates the stuff. We were literally standing in line at the Dallas airport, I guess waiting for tickets or reticketing. I can't remember what we were doing. But the next thing I know, he's like opened his wallet and somebody else, and they're like looking at each other's pictures. And, you know, as far as I know, he was invited to somebody's wedding. Okay. I mean, it's like. And it's everywhere. It's not just, you know, random occurrences. The dude just walks into a room. If you were a D&D character, you'd have to be a paladin with that much charisma. So, but it's crazy.
I thought he was just loud. And, people...
No, it's a subtle thing. The loudness helps. Crutch is just jealous because I got to the head of every ticket line because I made friends with all the airline employees.
Yeah, he actually got on the plane before me, and his ticket was for after me. And I'm like, you know, what is the sense of having rules if Charisma Boy here can just roll through the place and just, you know, park his keister, with a smile and a wink, you know? I mean, that's just.
She called me Sweetie.
She did.
You know, it's the gray hair now. You get to be Sweetie.
Yeah, it must be his good looks, you know.
He's a dashingly good looking man.
Yes, that's what it is.
Oh,
story of the road and wine.
Chris, this has been an absolute pleasure.
Well, thank great. You so I much appreciate for coming you, on. You know, let me on, and anything you can do to spread the word, it's a great.
We're going
to
plaster it all over the website.
Yep,
let's make sure people get ahead of scan that, folks. When you go to the website, scan the QR code. Go to the website. I've got links for everything in the show notes. You have no excuse. Let's make this happen.
And you'll hear about it at the end, because I think we have, this might be our first, by God, real commercial.
I know. Usually we do commercial parodies because we have fun. But you know what? Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for this wonderful show. Chris, thank you for being with us.
Great. Everybody. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
And we'll certainly be back next week. But before we go, we have a commercial for you.
Tonight's episode brought to you in part by, look, if you would like to support Amani, we have a few alternatives for you. You can send a donation via the Postal Service to Friends of Amani USA, P.O. Box 16075, Hookett, New Hampshire, 03106, or directly to the center at Amani Center for Street Children, P.O. Box 6515, Moshi, Tanzania. You can get more information on Amani at amanikids.org. That's AmaniKids.org. In addition, Chris has set up a GoFundMe to support the center's efforts to get a new water pump for the center's farm's use. You can find it at GoFundMe by searching for Support for Amani's Farm and Children's Education, or scan the code on our show website. And all of this information, as always, put on by our loyal system administrator crutch up on the show website. Make us proud, guys. Let's try to get him enough money to get two more cows.
Swimming with the Fish is produced by the Happy Pole LLC. Copyright 2026, all rights reserved.